Hello and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the doily, tight hair bund, arsenic and old lace world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me as always is Ben.
Hey, Mac.
Hey, so up front, we need to talk about something. There's going to be a little bit of a change to the podcast.
Just a little.
So I am moving to Chicago. It's the beginning of August and when we're recording this. And I'm going to be moving to Chicago this month. And what that means is that Ben and I will no longer be in the same place when we record this. I think this is the first time I've said this in your presence, and it's real sad.
I mean, I know we've talked about it, but right. I don't know if
it,
you've
know
said it out
I've
loud.
I've made eye contact.
And, right.
We've
and now
about
you're
this.
Really thinking
really
about it.
I'm really thinking about it, and it's sad. Having a real emotion and in front of a microphone.
I know, it's an awkward thing, but don't worry. You can edit it out.
But I won't, because it's real. but... So what that means is that Ben and I will be recording in separate places. And while we figure it out, we may have to take the show on hiatus.
I think it's a pretty safe bet that we'll need to take hiatus because...
It will take hopefully not very long. Yeah. Just keep subscribed to the podcast and the next episode will show up when it shows up. Hopefully it'll show up in 2 weeks just like it normally does. Maybe we'll be able to figure it out quickly. We've got a little bit of buffer, but we'll see. We've got a little bit of buffer, but it's...
But it's thinner than usual. I mean, fingers crossed that what we have is enough.
We wanted to warn you up front that this is going to be happening.
Yeah.
So.
And if we're here like always 2 weeks from now, then just ignore all this.
Yeah, just forget that we ever said it.
We totally won't mention it ever
or
again.
Or I edit it out and it's gone. Yeah. So we'll find out.
Just edit the sadness away.
I'll just edit the podcast out. Well, thanks for listening. This has been Columboys.
Right.
This week, we're taking a look at Try and Catch Me, starring Ruth Gordon as a mystery writer who murders her niece's husband as revenge. This is the third murderous writer that Columbo has faced off against, suggesting that the producers are either out of ideas or they are planning something. Gordon received 5 Oscar nominations over her career and won a Best Supporting Actress Award for her role as the devil-worshipping neighbor in Rosemary's Baby. This episode also stars Mariette Hartley, who appears in the correctly appreciated Genesis 2. Also appearing is G.D. Spradlin, who had a series of small but memorable roles in many a film, including the Senator in The Godfather Part 2 and General Corman in Apocalypse Now. He was the lawyer guy. And that is the end of the pre-written remarks.
Great.
I really like this episode. This is a fun one.
Ruth is amazing.
She's really great.
She's so good in this episode.
She does a really great job of playing this very eccentric character.
Yeah, an eccentric writer who has who clearly is the master of her own domain.
Yes.
And is so rooted in herself. Like really, she's incredible, but the back and forth between her and Columbo is just fantastic. Like that's the true star of this whole episode.
It's a kind of character that we haven't really seen, which is like an empowered, intelligent, like when Joyce Van Patten played the older lady,
yes,
even though she wasn't old, but when she played that, she played her as very like refined and sort of genteel, and and what we haven't seen is this sort of like spry, like quick-witted kind of match for Lieutenant Columbo. Yeah. We've definitely seen people who are on an intellectual level, but I think this is the first sort of female murderer who has challenged him, like who has like intellectually challenged him or gone up against him in that sort of way.
Yeah, has had the sort of fearless like back and forth with him without
who isn't afraid to lie to his face or make something up right in front of him and doesn't care whether or not it's plausible, just as sort of...
Yeah. It's kind of daring him to do better,
she's
basically.
She's just literally like spitting theories off the dome. She's just like, here's what I think happened, and just making stuff up on the fly.
Yeah, it's total bullshit. Yeah, it's fabulous.
So the murder is actually pretty simple, really.
Yeah.
Like this, this isn't a one where it's like a complicated, convoluted murder or even a complicated, convoluted catch. It's more about this like wonderful performance and sort of the back and forth.
Yeah, this is so much more about the performance. I mean, having said that, like it does take us a little while in the run up to the murder.
Yeah,
and that's well. Go ahead and
so the murder is the murdered person is the
Edmund,
the husband of the niece of Ruth Gordon's
character. The widower of her niece.
Her niece, who died in a mysterious boating accident that was very clearly murder.
Right. Very, very obviously, from the moment she mentions it to him, it's very obvious that it was murder and that he did it.
Absolutely. She knows that he did it, and she's going to exact her revenge, but first she tells him that she's going to sign her will.
She's going to make him, like, her sole, you know, inheritor.
Right. Yeah. She gave the performance rights, or the rights altogether, to a play that she had written.
To
her niece. And then they now belong to Edmund since she died, and he's, like, living
on the profits
high on
of
the hog.
That. Yeah. Is that
a saying? Is high on the hog?
High on the hog is a real thing. Oh, I've heard my father say that a whole lot, and I wish he wouldn't. But
But he is living. He's living it up on the profits from the residuals from this play, and I think it's also a book.
Yeah, he is basically a man of leisure.
And so she's going to. She gets two wills, one where he gets everything if she dies, and one where she gets everything if he dies.
Right, so she springs that on him while she is signing the other will.
And then basically she concocts a plot where she convinces him to sneak back after everybody's left.
So she can show
him something in the safe.
Basically so she can give him the code to her safe, which is a walk-in vault that is soundproof and... sealed, so...
I don't think, even if the vault was soundproof, that it would prevent the sound of someone banging...
Beating on the
door? Physically hitting the door.
I would think not.
I don't
not.
Know yeah. that it's possible.
But we'll just... we'll give them that.
It's soundproof. It's television soundproof.
Yeah, yeah. Which means, you close the door, and then we just kill the audio.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And so she seals him in there. And basically
after she says, I know you killed my
niece. I know you killed her, seals the thing, and then leaves on a vacation to New York.
Mm-hmm.
She leaves on a stock footage vacation to New York, which comprises three amazing shots.
May I have another scotch, please?
A shot of a plane flying from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen to show that she is moving west to east.
Yep. A shot of New York.
A shot of New York City from a helicopter.
Uh-huh.
And then a shot of a plane moving
facing the other direction.
Yes, moving right to left.
Yep.
To
Did
show
you get it yet?
She's flying back.
Yep.
And she
it's
she
actually kind of charming
celebratory how, scotch on both sides.
Yeah, it's actually kind of charming how ridiculous it is.
So she gets back in Columbo's there, and then the investigation starts.
Right.
Very enjoyable.
Yeah. No, it's really fun to watch them go at it. I wouldn't say it's the fastest paced episode by any shake, but you're just there for any time the two of them are on screen together.
There's almost no action. There's almost really nothing.
There really isn't
to look at, and it's all kind of, you know, in their heads and in the tension in the battle.
Yeah, which is, I mean, again, it's one of my favorite things about the show. I do want to point out there's so much good stuff in the run up to the murder.
Yeah,
because even when she's got him back in her office for the will signing and things like that, there are all these wonderful sort of moments of tension.
She keeps dropping these weird asides she'll be like,
well,
I finally figured out what I'm going to do to you, Edmund, or what I'm going to do with you, Edmund.
Yeah.
There
are like the weird asides, but there's also this constant tension of the way that she looks when she sends him into the safe and that she does it multiple times where like as a viewer, you feel that kind of buildup of like she's totally going to shut him in
there. There's a fake out earlier on where she puts her hand on the door as though she's about to close it.
There's some really good ones like that. I mean, one of the things that's nice is like one of the first things we see is her testing how soundproof it is.
She puts a radio in there.
Yeah. It's an interview with her.
Right.
On recorded tape.
Turns it up all the way.
Yeah.
Puts
it
in there.
Shuts it and then has people in and has conversations. And
there's a really great scene between her and Edmund on the beach, which is when we learn about the murder.
Yeah.
Where they're having a conversation. And then she says... she says something ominous.
Yeah.
She says, oh, he says, the Coast Guard looked, and she says,
I know you looked.
I know you looked. I know everything you did, Edmund. And then she just stares at him. Yeah. And then as they're talking, two horses gallop and go like on either side.
Yeah,
them.
Two riders on the horses.
It's a wonderful shot.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I took notes because I was like, that's such a good shot.
It's a really good shot.
Tense, like they just stare at each other.
They don't even like notice as these two people on horseback ride within touching distance of them. They're very close to them. And it's really good.
It's so good. It's so not something I was expecting to see.
And it ramps up the tension, but then she like smooths it out. She immediately gets back into sweet old lady mode.
And that's a really great example of kind of how she operates through the whole episode. Because she will do that where she kind of ratchets tension up and then she pushes the release out.
These great moments of darkness where you can feel like there's definitely sort of a malevolent. And if you've ever seen Rosemary's Baby, you're familiar. Yeah. This is a thing that she's very good at. It's that darkness, but also the glee and the sort of like childlike wonder. And she's very clearly in charge all the time.
And enjoying the hell out of herself, which is the other thing that's pretty great. But the times where there are also moments where like she's going back and forth with Columbo and he'll say something and you can see like genuine fear in her face. And it's really great. Like she's so expressive without sort of overselling it, if that makes sense.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. I think she gives such a wide variety of reactions. There are some reactions that are so huge and cartoony and wonderful. But there's also a lot of very subtle, you know, like, just sort of face. You can see in the concentration in her face, like that she's scheming or that she's sort of.
I'm nodding. Nobody can see it. Yeah. I'm nodding.
There's a lot of like, it's a great variety. She's not sort of working on one level, which is like, you know, a Shatner or whatever, where they have this very big sort of place to go, but they don't have the small place to go.
Yeah. They have one place and it's shouting.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the kind of nuanced performance you would expect from an Oscar winning actor.
Of course. Yeah. 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 But it's such a joy to see. And it's so, it just makes me happy. It's such a fun episode. I really enjoy it. It's really fun.
And it is kind of a murder mystery in the older sense because you know who did it. There is a little bit of a clue, but not much. I think it is kind of, it's not quite a Deus Ex Machina because they very clearly establish the parts of it. It's just they don't necessarily like.
Yeah, they basically establish that like he had kind of black paint. Right. On his fingers and on like his belt buckle.
Yeah. They find the mark on the box, which they don't know what it is, but they find it kind of early on.
Right. They find kind of that, you know, there's a little bit of scratch there, you know, but Columbo also says like, that black paint's only on the outside of the safe, which is, you know, obviously it's also on the boxes in the safe. But they don't spend too much time on it after they set it up. They spend a lot more time on the keys to his car because he leaves them out and she nabs them and then like sticks them in the ashtray.
There's giant,
just enormous ashtrays, but it's great because it gives us this wonderful moment when she returns back from New York and she comes through the front door and the ashtray has three of Columbo's cigars in it,
right,
kind of staked out. You know,
and she just sort of regards them contemptuously.
Yeah,
and then it's a fun little foreshadowing for a Columbo fan to go, oh, yeah, he's here.
Okay. Yeah, to go, oh yeah, he's already here.
Because who else is smoking at the crime scene?
Right, and who else would go through three fucking cigars already?
Yeah,
but it's really So like the keys wind up being a big focal point. You know, in the like, well, I've got to find the keys, and that becomes like a point.
Marion Hartley, who plays her assistant Veronica.
Basically blackmails her.
She finds the keys and then blackmails her into like becoming. She's her assistant and a writer. Yeah. She helps write the her speeches. I think she's like her speechwriter.
Like speechwriter, and then also like personal assistant and kind of
And so she blackmails her for like. She gets cruise. To go on the trip.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think she's blackmailing her for a larger stake in the whole thing. But part of it is this cruise that she's about to go on. which more stock footage. She's about to embark on another stock footage.
Yeah.
I guess we could talk about that because that's the catch.
Stock
so
footage journeys
she's about
for
to
days.
Head on another yeah. on a stock footage vacation. When Columbo comes to the stateroom and pulls her back on land, takes her back to the crime scene, which is her office.
Well, and he pulls her by basically, because what happens is he catches her.
She
said, just
she
as she's
said
about
she
to.
Found, she found the keys.
Right.
She's about to dispose of them, and Columbo finds her.
Right.
And she says, here are the keys. I found them.
Right, because he keeps saying, when I find the keys, I'll find the murderer. And she basically said, goes, well, here they are.
Right. She's trying to defuse this particular, you know, stick of dynamite. So she says, I found them. They were here in the garden by this sprinkler. I don't know why she picked this particular thing that was so close to the house that very obviously would have been searched.
Right.
It's like, it's not even like... far from where you would look.
It's not just, buried in the bush or anything. It's just out in the open.
On the ground.
Yeah. Because she just,
And Columbo basically says, well, we have a picture of where those keys were and they weren't there.
And they
there,
weren't there, so that's not where they were.
That's not where they were. You found them somewhere else.
Yeah, and she just goes, oh, I'm an old lady in my memory. Which is like, what a baller move
and he's
to
like,
pull on Columbo.
No, I have a warrant, so come on.
But she acquiesces, which is like the sign that she knows, you know.
Right. Well, she knows she knows she can't get out of it easily. So she's got to go back for, I would say, 50 to 60 Hail Mary throws. Her way to talk out of this is to literally just throw everything against the wall and hope that something sticks. Like, so they go back and they find Columbo brings out these black boxes, which have the scratches on them, which they've identified as being the same paint that was under the victim's fingernails and on his belt buckle, which he took off to scratch something. So he's got these scratches, and he pulls one out, and he flips it over, and he says, what does that look like to you? And she's like, V for victory. Perhaps he was, thinking about his successful escape and plotting that. Or maybe it could be for Veronica. For Veronica, I've done it. Oh, that terrible woman. Then he flips over. She's like, oh, and A for
unfinished Abby. A for Abby, my maid. And he's like, or you.
Or you.
Yeah.
Or Annie. Annie was the maid. She's Abby.
That's right. Yeah. Annie and Abby. Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, flip it this way. It looks like a Y. And she's like, why? The eternal question, why? Perhaps he was considering his own mortality.
It's like when you catch a five-year-old and they just keep making up excuses after you tell them, no, that's not what happened.
Yeah. Like, it's pretty amazing. It's amazingly transparent, but like Columbo just lets her do it because he's like, I don't care. I've got you, basically.
Yeah. Well, it's just that slow, long, drawn-out thing of, like, how long are you going to do this while I flip these fucking boxes around?
It feels like it goes on precisely as long as it should.
Yeah.
Like, it goes on a little too long, but also it goes on just a little too long enough.
Right. Yeah.
Where it's very clear she's desperate and sort of losing her mind.
Yeah.
And so it turns out that the marks are not a letter.
Right.
They are an arrow pointing upward to the light bulb, which was broken.
Right.
The light bulb was known to be broken, and he removes the light bulb and finds a piece of paper under the light bulb.
And it's a missing piece of paper from a
book that has been established. This one of her, not her most recent book, but an older book.
Her one from last year.
Right. Yeah. And it is called
The Night I Was Murdered.
The Night I Was Murdered by Abby. What's her last name?
Abigail Mitchell.
That's right. I wanted to say someone else's name.
That would have been, I should have let you. I'm sorry.
It's fine. So it's The Night I Was Murdered by
Abigail Mitchell.
Abigail Mitchell. I was going to say it again. Okay.
Yep.
He's
taken one of the six matches.
He did all this in the dark and he used a match to look at what he was doing. He only had six matches. By the way, I have to say, this guy is amazing.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
I know.
It's a shame that he is like...
Well, he was a murderer.
I know, but I'm saying it's a shame he didn't use his talents for good because apparently he is brilliant.
I know. He would have been an incredible escape artist.
Yeah.
For the fact that he didn't escape.
Well, but he did mastermind this insane plot to hide
Okay, so no, that was it.
He scratched out...
He should be designing escape rooms.
Yes, absolutely he should. So he scratched out the night, mm-hmm. and so now the piece of paper, which is the title page of this book, reads, I was murdered
by Abigail Mitchell.
Yep. And it's great. It's a great little catch. Yeah. And then she says, like, oh, can you let me off this time?
Because I'm an old lady and I'm harmless.
Like, no,
yeah.
I don't think
and
so.
He's just like, hmm. But it's also nice when earlier she says, you're such a nice, and she's like, compliments him, like, you know, you're such a kind man or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you can't count on my kindness. Like, and it's the kind of shit I haven't heard from him in a while. And I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
That's.
It's great because he is very nice and very magnanimous. Yeah. There's a scene early on where Abigail is talking to this women's detective fiction book club kind of
something
thing?
Like that.
I don't know.
It looks like, I mean, it's like a luncheon,
it's
right?
Some sort of luncheon at a country club or something.
I just always
like
assume it's, yeah, people paid a lot of money to
and,
have.
So she's having a thing. She pulls Columbo up on stage as has happened like 20 times by this point in the series.
Yep.
He's always getting pulled up on stage. He does a little speech and he says, you know, that crime isn't like, he doesn't feel that humanity is awful,
like,
and terrible.
Most people are nice, like all of you people, and my job lets me meet nice folks like you.
Yeah,
and I actually a lot of the murderers because
some of them are not, they're not terrible.
Right. Like what they did is still bad. But, you know, there's still some, you know.
And then at the very end, he tells Abigail that he understands why she did it.
Yeah.
He doesn't condone it, and he doesn't say that he forgives her or anything like that. But he just says he understands.
And it's what she says to him that just really got me. Like, it was the thing where she basically was like, you know, if you had been investigating my niece's murder,
none of this would have happened. Emotional reaction to that.
Yeah. I mean, because it really, because she's really good.
She's very
and
good.
And she fucking nailed that. But it's also very accurate. Like every, you know, the way she characterized, you know, Abby Mitchell, just everything. It was very, it was just so on the nose of like, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And it's like that moment of sadness of like, yeah, I kind of wish that had happened for your sake and for hers.
It is kind of a, you know, it is a little bit of a reminder that in the real world, Columbo doesn't, you know, all the cases don't go solved. It's a little bit of that. Like,
oh, yeah.
And that all, that has a ripple effect. Now, does that mean you should go and, you know, commit vigilante justice against your nephew-in-law? But probably doesn't mean that.
No.
But,
nope. Murder's still not great.
Wrong. We're still, we haven't mentioned it in a while, but it is worth pointing out that the Columboids is still anti-murder.
Stance hasn't really changed.
No,
so.
I know, but here's the thing. Just because you're not actively condemning something doesn't mean, you know.
Doesn't mean that you're
condoning. If you're not actively condemning, maybe you're passively condoning. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's important
fair.
To mention that we are still anti-murder. And if you are a murderer, please stop listening to this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of things that we should actively, there is a really horrible lamp that she owns.
That's true.
In a scene.
Yeah. Speaking
and
of active,
just as a heads up, it's, I mean, it's like a lawn jockey kind of thing.
Yeah. There's and, that. And it's, that. That's part of her decor. There's
not great.
There's also a belly dancing scene, which is also quite culture appropriative.
Yeah.
As
well, so the belly dancing scene is like, yeah. So like, there's that problem, and then there's the other problem of like, somebody went, well, we don't have enough ladies in bikinis, and
well, they're
literally
like,
just concocted an excuse to have this scene, which
well,
is
like, Mariette Hartley is very attractive. How
yeah.
can we get her to take her clothes off?
Basically.
That was basically
and it's
the
like,
thought
you don't have to, she was doing great. You didn't have to do this.
And she, by the way, she's also great in this.
Yeah. No, she's fantastic.
I think, legit, I think everybody is really good in this. I think Edmund is really great.
There's no duds.
No,
yeah.
It's a very solidly acted and directed and written and everything about it is great.
What was it about Edmund? Was he in MASH?
He was in MASH. He was in a bunch of stuff. But
okay.
Yeah, there was a. If you go to his IMDb page,
it's just like a picture of him from MASH.
It's a picture of him from MASH. Okay. And the thing I love about MASH is that whenever you see a picture of someone, you know instantly that they're in MASH. Like,
right.
it doesn't matter like what they're doing or what clothes they're wearing or where on the set they are. You're just like, right. Oh, that's a photo.
From yeah. That. You're never going to mistake it for like Full Metal Jacket or it had a Jacob's Ladder or something.
Incredibly
yeah.
specific look to it, even mm-hmm. though it was just like military for some right. reason, the cameras, the lens, the lighting, I don't know.
Everything about it is
he could only have been yep. on MASH. There are a lot of people,
somebody's really going to fuck with your head the day that they do like a kind of perfect shot style recreation of MASH and do
other
weird
stuff. I
would love
it. Bring MASH back. I think I love MASH.
No, I don't. I'm not saying bring back MASH. I'm just saying like exactly the same lighting, exactly the same camera tricks, and like
if Instagram can put out a MASH filter, I'd be very into that.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah.
You just need wood.
Yeah, you just do that, and you'd be in right wood paneling, and then you would just be wearing fatigues. Yeah. That's just how it. Yeah,
I'm way into it.
That's actually kind of rad. That's more of a Snapchat filter, though. Sorry.
I love MASH. I'm willing to talk. Let's just stop and talk about MASH because I just want to talk about it. How great it is.
Okay.
You
can't. I won't have a lot of input because I haven't
briefly
seen a
come
ton
back.
Of it.
I watched when I came back from. I'm sorry. I'm pointing around this thing around.
Please don't stab me with that thing.
edit that out. but when I flew back from Boston, I might edit this whole thing out. But when I flew back from Boston from PAX East, I got one of those little screens.
Yeah.
And they had the finale from MASH. So I flew back. It was the middle of the night. I couldn't sleep. And so I just watched the finale of MASH and cried like 50 times.
That's real fucked
like,
up.
Legit, like seriously, like bawled my eyes out on a plane flying back to the West Coast.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get it. Like, I definitely get why you would bawl your eyes out watching, you know, the finale of MASH.
It's amazing. It's 2 hours long. There are no commercial breaks.
Yeah.
I mean, there are no commercial breaks at all because it was on, you know, a thing in television.
Right.
But I mean, because it's on a screen on a plane.
Right. A screen on a plane.
But it was originally
broadcast.
There's no show now that gets a 2 hour long finale, like on network TV. 2 hours, no commercial breaks.
Yeah. But like MASH was a huge part of culture at the time.
It was, it's a great show.
This has been our MASH talk, everyone.
Yep. That's it on MASH.
Yeah.
MASH notes.
No, but I totally get it.
Our podcast.
Also, how weird was that for the person sitting next to you on the plane?
They were asleep, fortunately. For
oh, okay.
Them. So they.
Or at least they had.
They were pretending.
They
to
had
be
the
asleep.
Decency to continue to pretend to be asleep while you cried silently next to them.
I'm a quiet crier. as many of my ex-girlfriends can attest.
Fuck.
Columbo, meanwhile, is a podcast, is a show that we talk about. Do you have, I'm assuming you have some fashion notes here?
I mean, I didn't take a ton. Yeah. So the sort of jacket and I guess skirt combo, it's sort of it might be a three-piece in total. I didn't get a good look at
Ruth's.
Yeah, it's
outfit.
Like the last thing she's wearing.
Yeah.
Is like one of those really kind of incredible, boucle kind of knit pieces, and I think they're a signature. I want to say Chanel. I always mess this up, and I'm not going to look it up because you know I know I'll get corrected.
Why would we start now?
Well, I mean, you do, but I rarely do. No, it's just a but it's a signature kind of style and piece, and you definitely recognize it. But it's also one of those things that is so clearly very expensive, like high fashion. Mostly the thing that I immediately took note of was like Edmund, and then also where's his name, Martin, her lawyer slash handler of estate, etc.
Handyman. Everyone who works for her apparently does every job.
Yeah,
I mean, kind of.
That's not
whatever.
Uncommon if you sort of work for rather
like
than
small,
a company,
yeah,
but like
a small team of people.
I was gonna say like an eccentric rich person.
Right.
They're probably going to make you do stuff that you don't want to do for a paycheck.
Yeah, she kind of just has, like, her team who kind of just does whatever.
But so Martin and Edmund both, I basically just took some basic notes about the shape because they were wearing almost identical stuff as far as, like, the shape and cut.
Yeah.
And that, like, that really broad, sweeping set of lapels that's very 70s.
Just kind of
really
generic 70s suits.
Yeah, really hard structured shoulder, the very high, like, tall collars and the kind of big, you know, big ties and stuff like, but it didn't feel like super out of place, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't have that kind of vibe of like, whoa, we're going crazy.
No, it wasn't loungewear.
Yeah.
But it was...
But wherever their shit came from, it was the same place because the jackets they were wearing were like identical cut. Yeah. But it looks good. That style, like...
You definitely had a reaction to Edmund's shoes. As shoes as depicted...
That's a good point.
You get a good close-up of them.
Yeah, there's a reason I didn't take a note about it, and it's probably because I didn't want to remember it. But when they take, like,
the
shoe
print...
We have to
go through this. It's like a traumatic event.
No, it's fair.
Ben, we have to talk about the shoes.
Yeah, they're penny loafers, but so the strap where you normally would have kind of the traditional... Like, is this weird bulbous...
Where you put the
penny. Yeah.
Yeah.
It, don't do that. It's really tacky. I knew a guy in... this is an aside, but in high school, because I went to like a fancy
lad school,
a prep school
for fancy lad.
Oh God, let's not talk dress code. But anyway, I knew somebody who, instead of putting pennies in his penny loafers, he put meal tickets in his,
like, for the school cafeteria.
Uh huh. Because he thought it was funny. Anyway,
it's not the least funny thing I've ever heard.
I've seen better. But so, yeah, so these, instead of like a normal strap, have this weird sort of puffy, like, three triple strap. And it's just, I'm sorry, it's fucking ugly.
They're also platforms.
Yeah, well, there's also that, which that doesn't bother me as much because
it's the 70s.
Yeah. But they're really just nasty. If they were like bit loafers, I would have been like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm not, I really dislike bit loafers, but also, like, I get that there have been periods where they are super in fashion and there are still people who wear them. And hey, if it's your thing, it's your thing. It's not mine. But this is just straight up an ugly ass shoe. And then Columbo was like, oh, these are such nice shoes. I really, you know, like,
they got the French style.
Yeah, the round toe. And he's not wrong. Like, the round toe is the best thing about them. Like, it's literally just that strap is so nasty.
Yeah. I'm hoping that platform shoe look comes back. That's what I think should be the next thing.
You could probably just take your shoes to a cobbler and be like, yo, can you just give me a thick-ass sole
on
this?
Build these soles so high that
stack
I touch
this
the face
fucker,
of God.
Yeah. Stack this fucker so high that I scrape my head on the ceiling.
I want shoes so high that God strikes me down and scatters my people and muddles our languages.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how high I want these shoes.
That's pretty high.
That's pretty high. I don't know. You have anything else on this episode? It's a great one.
I mean, no, I really took a lot of notes about what was going on and like...
anything?
What was the... Oh, so when the horrible lamp happened, Columbo wanders over to the piano and
he
tinkles
playing.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This old man.
And I just immediately wrote, fuck you, piano. Because, of course, because, like, come on, y'all. Yeah. Really? You're going to put that in there?
And he whistles it a couple times during the episode.
Yeah.
We're starting to get to the point where it is becoming integrated into the show. It's not part of the score yet, which is a thing that will happen later.
I hate all of that. Like, if he just whistled it occasionally, fine, I guess. But, like, it's just...
He loves that song for some reason, and it is it's not a good. I mean, even as nursery rhymes go, it's a bad one.
Right? There are better options, but the dog's adorable.
Dog is back.
This version of the dog is very cute. I mean, and is only in one scene, so that helps rather than it being a constant sort of.
He's just a big fuzzy lump, and I love him.
Yep,
he's my favorite character.
But I don't really have a whole lot else to add. It's a very, again, like, the performances are remarkable. There's that incredible shot on the beach. There's a lot of great tension leading up to the murder, and then the back and forth with them and kind of the little pokes and jabs are all, she's so good, man.
She's great.
She's so good.
Columbo's great. Peter Falk is always gifted, extremely good physical comedian, which I think he doesn't get enough credit for. I think everyone knows that he's good, but I don't think, like, people really understand, like, how there's a part where all that he does is he sits down in the chair, but every time they cut back to him sitting in the chair, it's very funny.
He asks, like, if he can sit in this chair, and she says, well, that's what it was designed for 400 years ago.
Right. And so he puts it down and he sits in the chair and the chair starts, like, to squeak. Mm-hmm. And then from that point on, just look like every time they cut back to him, he is in the his entire body is registering tension.
Yeah, and tension,
he's wonderful.
So uncomfortable, and it's really he is
like he's committed to sitting in the chair. He doesn't want to stand up for some reason.
Yeah, at that point it would be rude
that he is that he is committed to sitting in this chair, but he also is very aware that he could literally break it by breathing at that point.
Yeah.
So, but it is like a wonderful little bit of some physical comedy from him.
But it belies like the level of skill he has as a physical actor and how much his physicality actually informs his performance.
I mean,
like
it's
if you pay attention, you will notice that like he's extremely physical as Columbo.
Yeah.
And I don't mean just touching everything, but
no,
like,
but like 90% of what he's doing is meaningfully moving in a way that tells you something. But it sounds silly, but it's true. Like when he picks something up and looks at it, he knows how to look at a thing to impart to the person watching him to look at it through his eyes. Like he knows how to do that. And it's remarkable.
Oh, it's an incredible skill.
It's one of the things that really, I think, probably let this show continue for so
absolutely
long.
Yeah, I don't think the show would survive without that.
No. If with any other actor, this would not have lasted as long as it did.
Maybe Andy Serkis.
I don't think so.
No, probably not. I mean, you'd have to... it would be a CG over that.
He wouldn't be a terrible Columbo if they brought Columbo back.
Yeah, actually...
I mean, he wouldn't be bad.
He'd be okay.
He'd figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, he's good at putting himself in. I'm just worried he would be too much, you know? He'd get too much into the mannerism
and that. I mean, I don't know how I'd feel about a modern version of Columbo just because, you know, the style of television has changed so much.
Right.
That I could see them trying to sort of
It would be very
make
difficult
it real
to
punchy.
Do something as slow and sort of as deliberate as Columbo now, but that's true of all shows.
I think they
really.
I think it's possible. I don't know that it would get made that way because of sort of how big Columbo was for its time,
right?
And sort of how they would
what
take
you want
that.
is something that's like that's sort of has the pace of an indie film,
right?
You'd want someone who's going to take their time and sort of tell this story. But, you know, if CBS did it again, then you're going to end up with something like New Miami Vice or whatever. You're going to end up with something that's like crazy and giant explosions and,
right.
nonsense.
Columbo so probably, and explosions, that just really...
It's probably best that they don't bring it back.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be Fast and the Furious.
Not everything needs to come back. That is the thing we need to remember, that sometimes it's okay if a good thing existed for a while and then stopped.
Right. And sometimes it's okay if that thing existed in an era where maybe not all of it is great, but, you know, but there's some gold in there.
Exactly.
Just got to remember that some of it's horrible and don't pretend that didn't happen.
Always, yes. We're just rambling now.
Yeah, I think we're done.
I think we should be done. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Columbo Boys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Yeah.
Do they still serve like regular pizza in Chicago? Because the deep dish, I don't.
I hope you like casserole.
Oh, God.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.